All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. We got a good episode for you today. It's a bit on the shorter side with Kevin Kisner, but I promise you will enjoy it. We're finally into the PGA Tour offseason, and it may be November, but the Epic Driver from Callaway is not done piling up the trophies. Congratulations to South Africa's own Brandon Grace, winning with an all Callaway bag at the Nedbank Challenge on Sunday. Flawless final round 66. And it seems like a good time to mention that the Great Big Bertha Epic is the number one selling driver of 2017 and will make a perfect gift for this holiday season. Go to callawaygolf.com/giftguide for more details. Also want to mention, while you're making your Christmas wish list, to make sure that PGA Tour Live is on your wish list. $40, $39.99 for the entire year, and it's something that you're going to use week in and week out. Be sure to check that out at pgatourlive.com. Now let's get to Kevin Kisner.
Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We're out 5 months late. We were supposed to do one at the Players Championship, and I ended up not missing it. But Kevin Kisner, we finally made it happen.
So we can blame that one on you, right?
That was on me.
It wasn't on me.
What happened was I was flying from Europe to the Players, and a guy two seats in front of me, an 88-year-old man, died on my flight.
Yeah, that's not cool, is it?
So I don't know if you want to put that on me.
I had one flight coming home from New Zealand that did that. I was sitting there, and this old man got up from his seat and face planted. And all I could think about was we're going to have to turn around and go back, and I'm not going to get home for two more days.
So you didn't care about the guy that face planted?
No, I kind of did, but I was a little selfish.
And was
I
was he like, all right?
Yeah, he ended up being all right.
Okay, then you can laugh about it.
I thought it, but his immediate thought was like, he just died. We're going to turn around. We're over the ocean. I'm never going to get home. This is awful.
That only happens on like when you're over the middle of the ocean.
That's right,
like, it's
right.
Not going to happen on a landline flight. But all right. We always ask pros this question. When was the last time you paid for golf?
I actually paid about 3 years ago. My friends we all went on a beach vacation, and we were partying pretty heavily, so I went in really incognito, and when I handed them my card, it was like $85, and they were like, wait, are you Kevin Kisner? I was like, I didn't know how to answer it. I was
it says it on your card.
I don't really want to be that guy today. So that was about it.
But you can call up places and just play for free.
Most of the time, yeah. Everybody's pretty sweet about it.
Yeah. What is your, and I'm sure you've talked about this plenty, but what is your current standing at Palmetto?
Palmetto, I think I'm back in pretty good.
You're in? You're good?
I'm allowed to come out. I don't think there's many ruffled feathers anymore. I think that's kind of swept under the rug.
What for people that don't know the background, what's the short version of that story?
So we were doing kind of an off-the-wall Vice Sports video for Callaway, and they were trying to show it all behind the scenes, and we all got a little crazy at the end and did a little golf cart race, and one of the guys ran into like a storm culvert drain and ran the cart into it, and they didn't like that we could have damaged their property, so they got a little ruffle feathers over that. But
that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's not like I wouldn't have paid for the card if we'd have broken it.
Of course.
But,
they didn't like that.
They didn't like it, but it's all good. It's all taken care of.
Under the rug.
Yeah.
What's your home game look like? Who do you play with? What kind of money do you guys play for? Yeah, I know that series kind of touched on it, but I wanted to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, so Scott Brown, fellow PGA Tour player, lives and plays at the same place, but in the last couple of years, we hadn't been home on the same schedule, so we haven't been able to play much. But, you know, we have guys, all they talk about is shots, of course, how many shots. So there's big arguments on the tee every day. And
what do you play off of then for the game?
I normally give them five on top of their handicap.
Okay.
But we like to play a lot of different bets. So if you're a six, I'll give you four, five, and six aside, and we'll play per hole. But the only time I can really make up for it is if they'll let me play birdies too, because obviously I'm going to make more birdies than them. So there's a lot of different games, a lot of different ways we play, and every time if I play well, all they talk about is they don't get enough shots. So it's never let the pro win.
Do you know how to play Wolfhammer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Favorite game.
Do you usually rake in that game then, or you just clean
up? Until you think you have the advantage and royally screw up and they hammer your ass back, and then it's things get flipped on you. You know, that's a very strategic game on that hammer thing. And if you hammer a little too early and the stakes get high and you don't come through on your side, right, things can get out of whack pretty quick.
You guys play with a bunch of junk too for dots, and we'll
mostly just play pullies and birdies.
Okay.
And if you don't know what pullies are, hitting it approach shot inside the flag stick.
Okay. We call that a wasabi.
Okay.
I don't know why. But we picked up the game actually from some guys at the Greenville Country Club. We went and played there with them.
Yeah.
And they have their version of it that just has junk all over the place, right, like a Hogan, where you go fairway, green, two putter better, that's a dot.
Yeah.
If you make a putt from outside pole length, that's a dot. If you play from one fairway over, that's a sevy. And if you make par better, and like the best is the Saddam. If you go bunker to bunker, that's a dot for the other guy. The Adolf, if you two shots in the same bunker, that's it. Oh, it gets wild. It's fun.
So yeah, we play at home club sometimes. If you, they call sandies from fairway traps for pars.
Okay.
So I'll aim at every fairway bunker off the tee and try to make par birdie so I can rack them up.
That's how you know you've made it, when you're aiming for fairway bunkers and just messing with people. So you're coming off, we're about a month after it, but your first President's Cup experience. What, if anything, kind of surprised you about the experience?
How busy we were.
Yeah.
You know, from Tuesday on, you know, it's nonstop as far as going to do media, going to practice, going to prepare. You know, we were in New York, so obviously the travel was a lot of time. And, you know, you're not on your own personal schedule like a normal week. You kind of go with the flow and everybody else. So that was a little different.
I mean, it seemed like from watching on TV, and again, we don't get to see every shot, and we kind of are at the mercy of the television broadcast to pick it up, but it seemed like every time you were on TV, you were striping it. Like, did you feel like you played excellent?
Yeah, I hit the ball great, and, you know, I drove it really nice, which helped Phil a lot. You know, you give Phil an iron into par fours, and he's going to do pretty well.
Right.
So that's why we matched up well, and I was driving it great. He was in his irons well. So any hole he was driving, he kept me in play. We did okay, and I had a great time playing with him.
How'd the pairing come about?
Tuesday in the team room.
Really?
Phil came up to me and said, kids, I really love your game. I want to play with you. Is that cool? And I was like, yeah, I have no problem playing with you. I'd love to play with you.
Legend
you,
like
you played,
Phil.
You played in 25 of these things, yeah, and I played in zero. So I'd love to have that experience on my side. And so they switched our pods around on Wednesday, and then they came out in third hole of the practice round on Wednesday and said, you and Phil are going to be paired together tomorrow. You're playing Jason Day and Mark Leishman. I was like, oh, just pair us against the best team on the team. You know, no big deal.
What other way would you have it, though?
Exactly, I mean, no doubt. And then Phil looked at me and said, you're teeing off on the odds. You get the first tee shot, which I don't know if y'all got to watch that much, but first tee shot was probably the hardest tee shot on the golf course.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how am I going to get this ball in the fairway on the first hole?
What were the, I mean, were the nerves as real as you were expecting that first tee?
You know, I was telling somebody, I was as nervous that morning as I've ever been,
yeah,
like more than leading a major championship on Sunday morning. I was just antsy, ready to go. And, you know, my coach was like, even the first 2 seconds, almost like a gladiator. He's waiting on some king to walk out and do thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, and he's teeing up. And it was a cool setting. And obviously the conditions were brutal that first day. The wind was blowing about 25 miles an hour. So it was a cool experience teeing it up, and now I know why people say you don't want to miss one after you played in one.
Yeah, I mean, everyone that kind of walks away, just and talking to a few guys on the team, just talk about how much fun it was.
Right.
And like, and it helped that you guys obviously played really well, yeah, as a team, but the camaraderie and the teamwork in that team room, whatnot, seemed to be kind of different than, you know, I know you don't have any other teams,
right,
to compare it to, but can you speak to kind of,
well,
what
I'd,
that
I'd
environment
never seen
was like?
So many guys, you know, 12 different guys and from all different backgrounds and different ages that just got along.
Yeah.
And we sat in a small room about like we're sitting in every night, 15, 16 deep, and just sat around and BS'd with each other and made fun of each other. And, you know, that's where I think we grew as a team, and the camaraderie came from is just hanging out. And yeah, I think that's the coolest part.
Did you feel like a rookie in that situation, or were you totally fine, like kind of shooting the shit with the guys?
Oh, no, and man. I was, I'm a big ball buster. So
yeah,
I was throwing it around pretty good. And I think the younger guys like that about me because I don't really care who you are. I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah.
And, I wasn't holding back any for sure. There might've been a few drinks involved and, a few trash talks from arisen from that.
What's Big Cat like in those team rooms?
Oh man, he's cool. He has that outlook of like he's so just what you see on course.
Yeah,
you know he's like that in there, and obviously he was the brunt of a lot of jokes during the week from all his transgressions over the last few years. So we had a few jokes lined up for him.
Does he laugh at those?
Oh, he dies laughing. He's like a little kid in the candy store.
Because he could take it, right?
Oh yeah, he could take it. And then he always busts out about how many times he's won, and everybody shuts up. And,
that's kind of the go-to. That's what Spieth was telling the story on the podcast about how he was talking. he was talking shit to Patrick Reed during a match at the Ryder Cup. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
You can't, until you win 74 more times, you can't talk. Because Reed was talking shit to him. But that kind of like internal competition thing is, I think, what kind of fueled that team. And
that fuels Tiger. You know, that Tiger's one guy the whole week was Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth. That's who his group was all week, because he loves that. And he loves that Patrick's as intense as he is, and they go at each other. So it's pretty cool.
Do you think that that kind of serves as a bit of motivation for him to get back out there? I mean, does that, were guys kind of ribbing him on that?
I think that team competition, you know, we asked him if he had hit any balls that week, and he's like, hadn't done anything but 60 yards, but he said, after this, I'm ramping it up. So we kind of forecasted, saw what was going to happen after that, and as we see, he'll be playing in a couple weeks.
The return of the stinger.
Yeah.
The dance on the 18th green with Phil. Whose idea was that?
That was Phil's.
That was Phil's idea.
So that morning in the team room, he's like, we got to have a handshake. I don't know what you want to do. So I kind of came up with that handshake we did where we blew up the knuckles. And then the next day, he's like, all right, we got to have something for a big moment. And and he pulls up this gif of the three amigos. And he's like, this is it, kids. This is it. So he literally popped up and said, let's do it one time. And we did it one time. And he's like, all right, we got it. And I'm like, we ain't got that, dude. Out there on the course with no chance we're pulling that off. So that 18th hole, I whipped it in the water, leave him out on his own. We were all square, and he hits a great shot. And walking off that tee, he put his arm around me and goes, when I make this effing putt, we're doing the Three Amigos dance. And literally, he walked up there and buried it like the champ that he is.
And I mean, was there any thought to, like, all right, we are crushing these guys. Maybe this isn't the best idea, or you're just like, I don't give a shit.
He doesn't give a shit. No. He loves it, man. And, you know, I wish he got to putt last and we did it.
Yeah.
But it was still cool. And after looking back, if Leash would have made his, it would have been cooler, even though we won and we would have the match. But it was a fun experience.
It's funny. I don't know if you got to see on the broadcast, but like your whole team was there on the side.
And they knew it was coming.
Well, it didn't look like it, because they start walking towards the green, and then they all pause when when you start busting it out. And then when you landed it, they all started cracking up. But it was so funny that they were like, their eyebrows were raised, like, they're really going to hit. They're going to hit.
Well, they
like
knew
this.
That we planned it.
Gotcha.
They all saw it in the team room, and I don't think they knew we were going to do it at that moment.
I mean, do you look back at, so I don't know, looking back through your career, like as of 2013, you were 29 years old and playing on the web.com tour.
That's right.
Do you look back, and that was 4 years ago, here I am playing now in like the pinnacle event of 2017. Does that seem like a fast transition to you?
Yeah, it does, man. And in 13, I was having a really tough time on the web.com tour. I knew I was going back to the PGA tour, and I knew I wasn't playing well enough to go compete on the PGA tour. And that's when I made the change to John Tillery. And, you know, from then to here has kind of been fast forward, and mostly in part to what he's helped me with. And now I'm in the top upper echelon of the tour and want to keep going.
So what's he helped you with?
Ball striking. You know, I wasn't a great driver of the ball and never felt confident over it. And it's turned one of my biggest weaknesses into my biggest strength. So I lead the tour, or in the top part of the tour, every year in driving accuracy, and I think that's a big part of my career.
What changed from a swing technical standpoint? I mean, is it really technical or is it mental?
Oh, it was big time technical. He often reminds me when I show up at his place, he'll put the first swing he has of the first day I showed up to now, and you're thinking, how did that guy ever make it to the PGA Tour compared to what it looks like now? So it's been a long road, and a lot of people don't see the sweat and the cussing and the yelling at each other and the six-hour days and hitting bays, working on things. And the cool thing about JT is that it's not just standing over a ball and hitting a shot. It's a lot of movement patterns. It's a lot of retracing your brain on this is how this is works. We don't always just, like, I was there yesterday and we were in gym shorts and t-shirt for 3 hours working out, doing different movement stuff, trying to train body patterns.
I mean, is your confidence, once you kind of get through that transition, well, A, did it feel like a long transition from, and I know, like, when you go from tearing a swing down, I don't know how much I don't know if you consider what you did tearing your swing down,
absolutely.
But I mean, you're going to go through a time period where your results are, it's, you got to trust the process, and you're going to, the results just aren't going to really be there. Did that feel like a long time before you finally got to where you were comfortable? Or
well, as bad as I felt when I showed up, I was at a perfect point. It was almost like, I don't care, man.
Right.
Anything you can do to help me. I know I can't compete with what I have right now. So I didn't show up thinking that I was the greatest player ever. I showed up kind of like, I'm ready to quit, or you're going to help me.
That helps.
And I think that's a big part of why I'm here. And I tell people all the time that, you know, about 8 months in, or I think it was a full year around, we were at the Honda, which is a demanding ball striking golf course, wind blowing, hard shots, and back right pin with water right into the wind was like my nemesis shot. And I hit this 6-iron right at it, and I was like, damn.
That was
I never hit that shot like that in a tournament. I'm normally bailing out way left, making bogey, and wanting to kill myself walking the next tee. So that was kind of a turning point in our career, is like, oh, yeah, this stuff's actually working even in competition.
You can trust it. Yeah, and absolutely. It just, I mean, that's got to just do wonders for your confidence. I mean, are you at a totally different level of confidence when you tee it up now?
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, when you start getting better, you start forgetting where you were. And I only want to get better. And if I start hitting it poorly now, I'm like, what in the world are we doing? He's like, dude, you're hitting it so much better than you think you are. So yeah. You got to kind of remember where you were and how far you've come.
Because 15, going back to 15, that was kind of, did it feel like at the Players, you're in the playoff for the Players, one of the biggest events of the year. Did that feel at that point like the biggest moment of your career?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, stepping on that stage with Ricky and Sergio, and nobody really knew who I was, and coming through and hitting the shots I hit coming down the stretch. I mean, that's probably why I've played well since then. I didn't win, but I didn't lose, and I hit a lot of great shots and gave myself a chance. And, you know, without Ricky pulling off a great finish, I probably would have been in Players Championship winner. So that kind of catapulted the year and the rest of my career, I think.
I would imagine you walked away from that week on a big high, even though you didn't win. That had to be kind of deliver the message to you, like, this is where I belong.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, if I'd have chunked it in the water on 17 and lost that way, I'd have felt terrible. But, you know, walking away, hitting it, birdieing 17 in regulation, and then hitting birdieing again in the playoff, and then hitting another good shot in the playoff again, those are shots you'll always fall back on when you're in that situation.
You lost two more playoffs later that year. How do you balance, like, being so amazingly close to win versus just knowing that you're right there? I mean, was that tough to deal with, those losses?
When I look back at it, I was always like, where I came from. You know, I played 2 years on tour, never had a chance to win. Played another year, never had a chance to win. Now all of a sudden I had three chances, and I felt like I hit pretty good shots in all the playoffs. And I know how hard it is to win. Some guys play the tour for many years and never win. So I knew I was going to eventually break through, and I'm just glad I did.
Now that you've won twice on tour, do your goals and expectations change when you tee it up? Like, I mean, what are you just, are you teeing up expecting to win? Is it a totally different mindset?
Yeah, I say this all the time. Your mindset on the first tee on Thursday sets up your whole week. And if you go in just trying to make the cut, you're going to be on that cut line on Friday afternoon. And if you're going in to win, you're going to look up on Friday afternoon, you're going to be in fifth place and feeling good. So I just work hard on my motion and trying to do the things I know I have to do to play well. And then I tee it up on Thursday trying to win. And I set my schedule up to places that I feel like I can win. I think that's a big deal.
I mean, for somebody like you, you're 33 now, right?
Right.
Yes. I mean, looking at your kind of trajectory and what you've been through and where, like, so come, take me back to like coming out of school. What was your amateur career like? Were you heavily recruited going into Georgia? And what were your kind of first years of playing professional golf?
Yeah,
like?
So I was a pretty good junior player. I had a lot of offers to go to a bunch of different schools. And when I pulled up to Athens, I fell in love with it. And, you know, really in my college career, I actually digressed probably some from freshman year to senior year. And that might be due to Athens and great town and partying and
what happened there,
good looking women. So I actually, when I left school, I went to work for my dad, and for a few months I went and worked with him and helped him do some land development stuff. And I remember thinking, this is sucks. I'm going to hit some range balls. And that's kind of where it started. And I asked him if I could go play some mini tours, and he helped me out with some cash and never looked back. And my career's kind of progressed from there. I wasn't even ready to turn pro right out of school, and I went back for a semester and hung out and did the whole football scene, and then turned pro the next spring and had a great time. And I had a great time on the mini tours, and every year my game progressed better and better.
That's got a question I'm always curious to ask the guys that play like on the mini tours, how that funding works and how you do day-to-day stuff. Because, I mean, unless you're winning those events, you're not making a living off those events.
So I was fortunate back then. They had some mini tours that had some money. I think I made over $100,000 2 years in a row on the mini tours. So I was fortunate. Dad gave me like $15,000 to start out, and I think I won my third event on the mini tour. So I never looked back and didn't have to ask for money, which is pretty fortunate compared to what a lot of guys are doing these days.
Who are some, you played the Hooters tour, was that right?
Oh, yeah.
Who are some legends you played with out there? I mean, I know that's a totally different vibe. I heard like Ted Potter Jr. is like a legend on the many tours and stuff like that.
He used to win every week.
Yeah.
I always hung out with Josh Broadway, the cross-handed golfer. He was my boy, and we traveled a lot together and played mini tours and web.com tours, but it's a whole different dynamic than the PGA Tour. You know, you're loading up, got a clothes rack full in the back seat of a Tahoe, loading up your bags, traveling 6-8 hours to the next event on Sunday, staying in Roach motels with 3 or 4 guys, and trying to save money any way you can. And now it seems like, hey, we're going to JW Marriott's and getting cars brought to us when we land. So it's a big drastic difference between the two tours.
There's no going backwards from this.
No, you can never see yourself going back once you get there. Just, that kind of drives you to work hard, though, you know? Because I've been there, and I don't want to ever go back to that.
That's what any time I get the chance to kind of drill home how many guys there are at that like mini tour level / web.com level.
Right.
And that it's got to just be so easy to wonder if you are blending into this group or if you have something different than the rest of these guys had. So at that time, and I'm speaking to, you know, your swing changes you made recently, it sounds like your confidence level is way different now than it was then. But at that time, did you look around and be like, I'm more talented than a lot of these guys, or was that
something I always won at every level. And I think that's what's huge. And I tell these kids all the time, they ask me questions. I'm like, if you're not winning the mini tours, how are you expecting to win on the PGA Tour? So the number one goal we all play for is trophies and wins. And, so I feel like you need to win at every level that you play at, and I was fortunate to do that.
What does Tiger call you? He's got like a little nickname for everybody. What's he call you?
He just calls me Kizzy.
Kizzy. And, he adds a I-E or Y to everyone's nickname.
So I had a little plaque that they gave us with a flag, and I got everybody to sign it from the President's Cup. And I was like, write something smart-ass on there, whatever you want, whatever I make fun of you of. And he wrote Kisner Who. I thought that was pretty funny.
That's pretty good. Anything he does, though, is going to be realm.
How good he was compared to how bad you are.
Yeah. Do you have like a favorite Tiger story, a go-to Tiger story that's tellable?
President Scully walked in with a drink one night at the team room, and he had like a cherries in it and vodka and like the biggest fruity drink you've ever seen. I was like, good Lord, what are you, 7? Is this your first vodka drink ever? I mean, put some tonic water in there or something. And everybody died laughing. He's like, well, the cherries are good, kids. I'm like, good Lord, you're like my daughter.
I always wonder what he drinks. That's interesting. Have you been to the Woods Jupiter?
I have not.
No. We went there last night. It was pretty good.
I heard it's good food.
It's good vibes, good food, good mac and cheese. But
JT always says he goes in there a lot. So.
He was there last night.
Was he? Yeah.
Like, I was like, how often do you come? He says, 1 or 2 times a week, as many as 5 or 6.
Right. So. It must be nice to be 24, rich, and not have anything to do. So you go to the woods every night.
So you're married now. How long have you been married now?
I've been married 5 years.
Five years, and you have one kid?
Two.
Two kids.
I got an 8-week-old boy and a 3.5-year-old girl.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, we got our hands full.
So was that? I mean, that. So doing the math there, it kind of sounds like you were having your first child was right around the time you were making major swing changes. Then is that right?
Yeah. Well, so she was born in 14, so right before I started to play great. So people say fatherhood's good on me. You know, it probably is. It makes you mature pretty fast and realize, hey, I used to have a lot of fun and now you're going to bed at 8:30 when your child is.
Right.
And you got more time to prepare and your weeks are kind of cut out around their schedule, not yours.
So what you said, you used to have a lot of fun. Was that like the mini tour days where they get pretty rowdy or even your younger years,
man,
on tour?
You're always doing something stupid on the mini tours. And
because it doesn't seem like that on the big tour. I mean, playing weeks, guys, and I was kind of surprised when I was over in Asia. I thought there'd be more of a scene at night and the dudes are in bed by like 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it's business, man. And as guys get older, you know, you play 25, 30 events in the year, you get beat up and worn out pretty quick. So Sunday nights are still fun on tour. If you got your boys around and you played well, you can have a good time. But once you start having a family and they're traveling with you, all that partying stuff's over. You hangover with kids is the worst. They don't know what's going on, and they want you to still be you, and it's the worst.
So you usually stay in town then after Sunday and leave on Monday?
I used to. Whenever I would just spend the night and fly out again on Monday with my wife or before her. I'd just do it on my own. But
who are the best guys to go rip it up with?
Oh, man. I love partying with Boo.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever hung out with Boo.
I've never hung out with him, but
Boo's
that's got to be a good
one. Greatest. Yeah. You know, it's weird. I either hang out with the rednecks or I hang out with all the guys from California.
Yeah. So,
like the Kevin Chappells, Charlie Hoffmans, Andres Gonzalez, those dudes, it's weird. Like, I remember I was hanging out with Andres Gonzalez, myself, and Jim Renner, who's from Boston. Can't get three more.
Different yeah. parts of the world.
And we're out at a bar late one night, and the chicks are like, what in the hell is this crew? We got Boston accent, hippie with a mustache, and this redneck that we can't understand. I was like, yeah, that's my crew. Don't worry about it.
What is like your level of like fame when you go out somewhere? Are you non-golf place? Do you get recognized very often?
Not that big a deal. No, yeah. I mean, I don't mind it too much. You know, golf people recognize you, but yeah. That's about it.
That's kind of a good place to live, I would think. Absolutely, you play good enough that golf people know who you are, but you can go and have peace and quiet with your family and whatnot.
Absolutely.
I feel like, yeah, I mean, definitely. We were just in here with Jim Furyk, and he was talking about how he gets recognized a lot at restaurants. But right. There's got to be, like, we've always said, like, the dream career is probably Charles Howell. Like,
oh, yeah. Probably made $30 million and can do whatever he wants.
Do whatever he wants. No exactly doubt. Right. So, what is, like, do you have, like, a, what's your favorite, like, go-to Phil story?
Oh, man, Phil stories. You know, we got, like, the most drastic difference in personalities, but they kind of mesh because we love to talk trash to each other. So we played a kind of a President's Cup match at PGA this year. Him and Strick played Chappie and I. And we're walking off the second hole, and he probably hit some terrible tee ball, and I said something smart-ass to him, and he looked up, and he's, like, all befuzzled. And he's like, Kiz, you're the only one on this tour that get, like, you're the only one that can get me. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you say the same kind of shit talking that I do, and I don't know how to come back, and it pisses me off. I was like,
he's used to
I'm
running
in
the
your
show.
Head, buddy. Yeah. Let's get together on Sunday whenever we got a chance coming down the stretch. I'm in your head.
It's amazing to me how, you know, people get on me because I obsess over the team events, Ryder Cup and President's right. Cup and whatnot, but how often it comes up in conversation with, it's so much different than what you guys normally do and how much it means to you. I mean, you even just alluded to it earlier when you said, once you're on one, it kind of, I'd imagine the Ryder Cup is just a goal that is near the top of the list.
Probably number one for the year. You know? Obviously, we always start out trying to make it to the Tour Championship in East Lake to have a chance to win the FedEx Cup. But team events, you know, I've played with Cooch right before the President's Cup in Boston or somewhere, and I asked him about it, and he's like, all I can tell you, kids, is whenever I played in one, I knew I didn't want to miss another one, and that still seems that way after all these. And, you know, it's just so much fun because you never get to hang out with these guys.
Exactly.
It's like, You get to see them in the locker room, whatever, play golf with them. But it's a totally different atmosphere when you're staying in hotel rooms or just like we were doing in a small room for an hour and a half, six nights in a row, just BS and having some drinks. And you get to really know people, and that's what's the cool part.
Probably takes you back to college, too, traveling as a
like
team.
It's like a frat party. Yeah. That's all it is. And, you know, everybody's there to help each other, which is completely opposite of every other event.
Let's go back to the Quail Hollow this year. You had a great finish, great week overall. Did you walk away? You were leading going into Sunday. Did you walk away from that week on a high, on a level of disappointment? I'm sure there was some disappointment with the way you finished.
I was probably more disappointed on that Sunday than any of my other chances to win, just because I felt like I was playing great. And I kind of let it get away, and then I came back, and then, you know, hitting in the water on 16 and 18. You know, unfortunately, we got rain again overnight and a lot of mud balls in the fairways. And it's just hard to compete with that. And JT played great. Obviously, he won. I wasn't going to beat him unless I played great coming down the stretch. But, you know, I was happy my goal for the year was to have a chance to win a major. I'd never done that. You know, I had a bunch of chances on regular tour events, never had a chance to win a major. And so that was cool. Last one of the year, I had a chance. And I think that's going to set me up for a great 18.
Was the pressure that much different that Sunday than it was earlier in the week, or different than any other pressure you felt in, say, the Players' Championship?
You know, the golf courses are just so demanding in major championships, and I think that's what's so cool about what not only Jack but Tiger did in winning so many of them, because things – not only do you have to play great, but things have to go your way when the conditions are that difficult. And, you know, I had a chance coming down the stretch, and you know, I wasn't – overly nervous. I was, you know, hitting good shots and giving myself a chance, but just didn't work out. Things will work out sooner or later.
When you're not playing tournaments, are you watching golf on TV?
Never. Couldn't tell you one person that's won this fall.
You have no idea who's won.
Somebody I was hitting balls on Sunday. Somebody asked me what Brownie was doing at the club, and I was like, I didn't even know if he made the cut. Sorry, man.
Well, Justin Rose is winning everything on the Euro Tour, and then Patrick Cantlay just won.
He's got a tough life, old Rosie.
Yeah.
Just keeps winning medals, struggle, and trophies, and everything else.
Well, I guess, I don't know if you can answer this question, then. I was going to say, maybe, what's something that like golf media talks about, or something you hear on TV that you just kind of roll your eyes at? Like, that's not reality at all, or any kind of...
A lot of people don't understand. Like, I always give DiMeglio from USA Today shit about conditions. So people don't understand how drastic like wind direction changes are. And I don't think the media covers that well enough about how the golf course changes day to day. They more or less just think we should make birdie on every hole. And why in the hell is that hole playing hard? And why did you hit that shot? And I think analysts could do a way better job of understanding why we're trying to do certain things.
Interesting. I haven't heard that one, wind direction specifically. Yeah. But, all right, man. I know you got a busy day. Appreciate you taking 30 minutes with us. But
no worries. Thanks for having
me. Good time.
Me.
You bet. Yeah. And I'd love to do it again sometime. Best of luck with the rest of the year. And,
hope you don't have anybody die on another flight when we're set up.
I hope not as well.
So, all right, brother. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Take care. Thanks.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most! Expect anything.